This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, signature support from the office of East Baton Rouge Parish Mayor's Office. And the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow is producing, and we begin with a gentleman who was with us a few years ago, Lawrence Francis Rooney III, Ambassador Francis Rooney to the Vatican, and before he was the U.S. Ambassador to the Holy See from 2005 to 2008 in the final days of the Bush administration. Congressman Rooney served the great people of Florida, and he is a man who's had great success in business, and he is based, as we speak, in the great state of Florida. And good morning to you, Ambassador Rooney.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back on.
Well, 20 weeks from an election, and there is much percolating in the political world, and you speak as a, I think, what we used to call a compassionate conservative. And I know you're intricately involved in trying to discern what's going on in Ukraine. And Speaker Mike Johnson of Louisiana, he was one of those who voted against aid to Ukraine, but then he pushed through an aid package saying that this is a threat that the United States cannot ignore and that we have to counter the actions of Vladimir Putin, who invaded a sovereign country without provocation. But how do you read what is happening in Ukraine as we speak, Ambassador Rooney?
Well, first of all, I'm proud of Mike. I'm proud to call him a friend. And we came into Congress together, and it just shows you that he doesn't get stuck on precedent. If he finds new information, he can change his mind. And I think he did the right thing. We just can't let Putin roll over everything. I fear what could happen if he just destroys the Ukraine, which he's certainly trying to do. But on the other hand, I also think we need to be pushing for some kind of diplomatic solution so this thing doesn't just keep dragging out until he kills every single Ukrainian.
Well, he's endeavoring to do that, it would seem, and those he's not killing, there are reports that 20,000 children have been absconded by Mr. Putin's henchmen. So this is terrible, and we've talked with Roman Rybchenko, who went to LSU, lives there, and he says that in some places life goes on, but it's not much of a life right now, is it?
No, it's really not. This is a war of attrition, kind of like the Civil War ended up being, and the people with the most resources usually win those kind of wars, and obviously Russia's got more resources into Ukraine. I mean, we're bolstering them with weapons, but Russia's got people, and that's a big risk. I don't think Putin cares if he kills every Ukrainian. He just wants the territory.
Well, how do you deal with a madman like that?
Well, I think that we need to gather up all of Western Europe, the UK, and us, and formulate a plan that we agree with and tell Zelensky, you need to take it. We need to stop this thing.
Well, will Zelensky take that? I mean, after all, the Ukrainians are victims. They were invaded. I imagine if somebody invaded the U.S., we wouldn't give them any states, no matter what. We'd fight to the bitter end, wouldn't we?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I guess the problem is, how long are the American people going to keep supporting it? It's getting a little more frayed. Each one of these appropriations bills is more and more difficult to accomplish. I would just say that we ought to at least have a parallel track, like kind of like what they have going with Israel and Hamas. And believe me, I'm 100% for Israel totally taking out Hamas. And I'm 100% for Ukraine stopping Russia, if it's possible to do.
877-217-5757. Yeah, when you talk about $60 billion here, $60 billion there, as Everett Dirksen would say, pretty soon you're talking real money. But aren't the sanctions against Russia having an effect? Maybe not as much as the United States had hoped, but Putin is paying a price too, isn't he?
He is, and there was an article in the Wall Street Journal earlier in the week that they're changing around the sanctions a little bit to try to make them more effective. I think we've been a little timid in the sanctions, quite frankly, not wanting to get after his bank accounts and things. And at least Western Europe's taking a stronger lead in that than we are. But yeah, I think we need to make it very difficult on Putin to sell things, buy things, gain currency, or certainly gain dollars. And I think we ought to go after all the ill-gotten gains of his billionaire buddies.
Well, what would a ceasefire, an agreement work? And plus, this isn't only Zelensky having to accept. Putin has to sign off on this. And as you said, he doesn't care what happens in Ukraine. And I'm not sure he cares what happens to his own people.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know if there's anything going on under the table to try to talk about diplomacy, and they've all been rebuffed by one or both of those two sides. I really don't know. But Putin would have to agree with it. That's why, you know, I just wonder how much of the Ukraine that he's taken that we would have to let him keep.
What about the election? I would suspect if Donald Trump wins, he'll have a different approach than Joe Biden.
Well, I hope not. I mean, you know, Trump was a little reluctant to get into the Ukraine thing, and that's one of the reasons they called for his impeachment the first time. And I told him, I said, I think you're making a huge mistake not to support Zelensky here and sending the Javelin missiles, which Trump did send in the Javelin missiles and all that. But he was so confused by the Hunter Biden stuff that he didn't see clearly the fight of Russia versus the Ukraine.
Well, he was impeached the first time by the House involving Zelensky. Yeah. And as Trump marches on, and we're now 9 years since he announced his candidacy in 2015, one thing he does is he keeps score. I don't know that he's forgiven Zelensky for being responsible for his first impeachment.
He may not have, but it was unfortunate that Trump got conflated the Hunter Biden criminality, which I believe it is, with Zelensky getting enough weapons to repulse Russia. He got those metaphors all mixed up. He got mixed up with, I mean, imagine that oil company paying Hunter Biden 600 something thousand a year to be a director. I mean, many of us have been on many corporate boards, big companies, and normally it's about 200 grand, you know?
So they paid him three times. Well, Trump's son-in-law got $2 billion from the Saudis.
I know. Bailed him out.
Well, that wasn't, why isn't Jared Kushner and Ivanka being, why aren't they being prosecuted?
Well, he did it smarter. He did it on his own. He didn't quote, call the big guy.
But he was working for the government when he did it, though. So I think they could.
Yeah, he did. He set the stage for it while he was in office by all that stuff with Saudi Arabia and Israel.
Okay.
I think it's kind of slimy. Yeah, I agree with you.
Okay. 877-217-5757 for a fascinating gentleman, Ambassador Lawrence Francis Rooney III, Ambassador to the Vatican and Congressman from Florida's 19th District from 2017 to 2021. You heard him. He went in with one James Michael Johnson, now the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives. Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on the air with Ambassador Rooney.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Ambassador. Just a question. Do you think Putin is a good poker player where he is really just, because you got some odd million people in Ukraine that's never going to like you, ever. But do you think he's just sitting really waiting on the election to make his next poker move? I mean, in other words, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Yeah.
Well, he is a good poker player. He's a steely-eyed guy. I mean, look at how he outfoxed Bush with Ossetia and Abkhazia, and we didn't do anything about it. Then he outfoxed Obama with Crimea, and Obama made a joke about it. So Putin sitting back there saying, hey, these guys are so confused and weak, I'm going to do what I want. And then he amassed all those troops on the border and just waited for a while. That's pretty good poker. He waited to see what we would do, and we didn't do anything.
Well, and Russia has abducted Americans, but George Will, I thought he wrote a column that made sense the other day. He said Russia wouldn't be doing any of this without their nuclear arsenal. We're all afraid that Putin, being unhinged and unstable and narcissistic, that he might hurl a nuclear weapon someplace. And if he does that, as George Will said, the world could end in a couple of hours, Ambassador Rooney.
Well, that is always the big fear. The same thing with the fear of Pakistan. That's why they could extort so much money from the Bush administration. You know, what do you do about a nuclear world? I mean, when we had only us and Russia and a couple of other European countries with nukes, we could have a standoff and arms control agreements. Now, I don't think you can do any of that. There's too many people with them.
Is it just a matter of time?
It could be. I mean, what happens if Iran gets the nukes and takes Israel out?
Well, Israel has nukes too.
Yeah.
So
that would be a two-way deal.
But they're close enough that they might destroy each other with their own nukes.
Mm-hmm. They might. They very well could. That's what I would fear. And then what do you do?
Well,
what do you say with North and South Korea?
It's something that, as George Will wrote, Reagan had all these scenarios when he was president, and he hasn't been president now in 35 years, and not one of them said the world would be worth living in after one nuclear exchange that ultimately would probably bring in other countries, and now there are multiple countries, as you note, some extremely unstable with nuclear capacity.
Yeah, it's a very scary time. And fortunately, most of the smaller countries don't have capacity to send nukes, across the ocean like Russia does. I mean, North Korea keeps saying they do, but they never seem to get very far. They always crash.
877-217-5757. A bit more time with Ambassador Francis Rooney after this time out on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Ambassador Francis Rooney, a two-term congressman, an ambassador to the Vatican from the United States, and chairman of Rooney Holdings, and he is a man who has done well in life. He has a law degree from Georgetown, Bachelor of Arts from Georgetown, so a lot of Catholic education there, and for those of us of faith, when you ponder these nuclear options, before we go back to the phones, and that's what we're talking about, and that, of course, is why there is a war in Ukraine. As George Will, the aforementioned columnist, wrote, that without the nuclear option, the United States and its allies would be able to protect Ukraine from Russia, but we don't want to go in that country and start a nuclear exchange that would be what Joe Biden said, World War III. But how much does faith play in just thinking that there may be some higher power who will intervene and keep us from vaporizing ourselves, Ambassador Rooney?
Well, I hope so. I don't know, how you deal with some of these irrational acts. I mean, mentioning faith, I mean, Putin today is launching an assault on the evangelical churches in the Ukraine. I don't know if we can be safe from ourselves or not. This is pretty scary when you think about nuclear weapons, particularly nuclear weapons shot by Russia, which has intercontinental range. I don't think there's a risk of them doing that now, but you just never know where things could get. What if Putin goes crazy because he can't win?
Which I think would drive him nuts.
Well, he said what he wants to do. He wants to get back all the territory that Catherine the Great had. And he's so there is a risk of a domino theory if we let him keep too much of the Ukraine.
If he were taken out, though, and obviously he has pushback in Russia, what he does to resolve that, he goes out and kills people like Navalny. But if he were to be taken out, is there any assurance that the person after him would be any better?
I don't think so. I think that guy that he just promoted to be head of the defense after he got rid of the guy in the airplane, is probably another Putin. I mean, I'm sure that if we are trying to get him, we haven't been able to, and if we're not trying to get him, it's for that very fact, that whoever comes next will be just as bad.
Paul downtown. Paul, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Ambassador Francis Rooney.
Well, good morning to both of you. I was curious about the relationship between Joe Biden and Pope, and mixed in with the nuclear talk, how it may play out with the United States and Italy. Thank you.
All right. Well, but go ahead. But the Biden and the Pope, I think, are okay. They're all
yeah,
right.
Yeah, I think they are. The Pope's playing it pretty cool, you know, about Biden's kind of nominal Catholicity. But
That's not fair. That's not fair. There are political positions, and then there. I doubt that Joe Biden commits as many sins as Donald Trump, but I don't know that. But I'm just, that's me. I think he's probably a pretty good Catholic. He's just not a guy whose political views are in sync with the evangelical wing of the Catholic Church. But please continue, Ambassador Rooney.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I know Joe Biden. I think he's a man of great faith. But all these guys, whether it's Joe Biden or my friend Joe Kennedy or any number of these guys that are faithful Catholics, if they're going to get ahead of the Democratic Party, they're going to be for abortion. That's just all it's going to be.
Now, are they for abortion or are they for a right to have an abortion?
Well, they're pro-choice, but you know that pretty well means.
Well, it means that the woman can make the decision rather than the congressman making it or the president or a senator. Yeah. I think in a free society, that's part of the deal. We can appeal to people's hearts, but to have laws that say you can't take a pill to stop a pregnancy, I don't know that that's going to fly. I think this is helping the Democratic Party, and as a Republican, I think you might be worried about this issue, particularly in the home state of Florida.
Definitely am. Look what happened in Virginia with Glenn Youngkin's effort to take the House of Delegates. It was all about abortion. He had polling that women in Virginia were okay with the 15-week deal. And then the Democrats changed the debate to exactly what you said. The debate is about a woman's right to choose, not math. And when you get it like that, it's a no-win for us.
Patrick in Innisfail States. Patrick, you're on with Ambassador Rooney.
Hey, Ambassador. It's an honor to speak to you today. I guess I got a comment and question about the Costa Cuba, these warships that are now in Cuba. I heard their submarines falling apart, which is good news. But why don't we focus more on this side of the hemisphere? I mean, I don't think a lot of Cubans embrace communism anymore. They're stuck with the regime they got. And what about like Venezuela? We need to get Russia and the communists out of Cuba and South America. What's your thoughts on that?
All right.
Well, I agree with you. It's not necessarily because of ideology. I mean, Maduro is no communist ideologue, and neither is Diaz-Canel. And they talk that way, but they don't act like that. Just like you say, they're just trying to hold on to a decrepit economy and a disturbed populace that doesn't have enough things. And sooner or later, they will fail. We just have to be careful what happens in the meantime. You know, we had Maduro on the ropes until Biden let him sell oil, which was a terrible mistake because Biden was concerned the price of oil would hurt his reelection. He should have stayed to his principles and continued to grind Maduro into the ground. We're still doing that with Cuba, and there's no constituency other than formerly Obama to open things up with Cuba. But now Russia's letting us know what they think they can do. And they're smart about it because there's no allegation of having missiles like the 1962 situation. They're just going in there to let us know they can go in there.
Well, what do you see happening moving forward? We've got, as I noted, some prominent Americans who are being held unjustifiably so by Russia. We've got Vladimir Putin, who invaded Ukraine. I suspect he's gotten more than he bargained for, but does that really do us any good?
Well, the only non-combat solution is increasing sanctions and screw down on those oligarchs and the billionaires and take all their stuff that we can find. And don't get too hung up on some of these niceties of how many shell companies they have in Cyprus, because we can get through that enough. And really limit him to where he can't make any payments or collect anything that's not in rubles or yuans.
Well, a listener asks, for whom is Ambassador Rooney voting for? I suspect you're going to vote for Donald Trump. I don't want to put words in your
mouth. Absolutely.
But I would say you're probably, like a lot of Democrats, you would rather have somebody else if you had your choice. But the choice is between Trump and Biden. And you being a Republican, you're going to go with the guy who has been the nominee now three times.
Well, and also, you know, I know Trump pretty well. He's a complicated individual. He's got some really bizarre ways of saying things and acting. But when you look at just what he did what George Bush or Reagan or Nikki Haley or any of them would have done as far as rolling back all of Obama's anti-business stuff, anti-capitalism stuff. And he did a good job of it. I was in the Congress at the time.
The economy is doing well. The deficit is actually down. But Bush and Reagan never started an insurrection.
No, that's where Trump really lost it. And his family was begging him to make a statement right away, and he wouldn't do it. I mean, what did he do, sit around and watch TV for about 3 or 4 hours before he finally, I guess his daughter got him to say something?
Well, he will not accept defeat. And I would suspect if he loses, and he may, it'll be close, and he will once again say it was rigged, Ambassador.
I'm sure he will, and it's really discouraging to me to read these polls that very high percentages of Republicans believe the election was stolen. You know, I wrote an op-ed about that after the election. And I said, we just need to get over it. I mean, the two people who have a beef about elections are Al Gore and Richard Nixon, not Trump.
Well, you and I agree on that. Although I think Al Gore had a better case than Nixon. You know, Nixon got jobbed in Illinois, but in truth, Kennedy would have won that election even if he had lost Illinois because of the Electoral College. But,
yeah,
but,
that's true.
But, and Kennedy, of course, and Biden, the two Catholic presidents, both of whom were Democrats. Yeah. Francis Rooney, will there be a Republican Catholic who's president someday?
Oh, there could be sooner or later. I mean, you know, back in those, for traditionally, I think almost all Catholics were Democrats. Certainly in the South, which includes Oklahoma, where I grew up, and Pensacola, where part of my family's from, every Catholic was a Democrat.
Well, you're a Republican, and it's a pleasure to talk with you. Ambassador Francis Rooney, thank you so much. We're back with more after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757. It was 40 years ago today that a talk show host who was quite popular in the West, and because of the clear channel nature of his station, KOA, Alan Berg was heard in 30 states, and he had become so popular that he was featured on 60 Minutes in January of 1984. Morley Safer did the piece. And then on this date, 40 years ago, June 18th, 50-year-old Alan Berg was killed, assassinated. And he had quite a odyssey in Denver, and one of his colleagues was a man who's worked in Baton Rouge for a generation. And in a few minutes, we'll hear from Don Nelson, who knew Alan well. And this is a story that we talked about once before, and I got so much response about it that Don's back for more, and this is an appropriate day to do it, 40 years ago today. And a guy who made his living with his mouth ended up giving his life because he said some things that some whack jobs didn't like. And it wasn't just one person. It was an assault team that took him out outside his home in Denver with high-powered weaponry. 877-217-5757. That's your Talk Louisiana number. And as we noted at the start of the show, 140 shopping days left between now and November 5th, the election day, and for the first time since 1892, we have two presidents who are running, the current one, Joe Biden, and the former one, Donald Trump. And Trump is the first person to be his party's nominee three consecutive cycles since Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was the Democratic nominee in 1932, 1936, 1940, 1944. He was 4-0. Although he died shortly after taking the oath for the fourth time. But it will be a race that appears to be close. NPR had some numbers this morning, and to show you where the country is right now, Trump in the NPR poll is even with Biden in the overall vote, and that would be a gain for Trump because, remember, he lost the overall vote by 3 million, right at 3 million votes to Hillary Clinton, and by more than 7 million to Joe Biden. Same amount of votes that George Bush beat Michael Dukakis by. So that's why it's implausible and ridiculous that Trump would say the election was rigged when he lost by 7 million votes. We can only imagine what would have happened to Michael Dukakis if he had claimed that in 1988. I think he would be in an institution somewhere. And the New York Times, in its pages over the weekend, wrote that former President Trump has hopelessly and publicly cast doubt about the fairness of the 2024 election. About once a day, an average, since he announced his candidacy for president. This is an analysis by the Times. The tactic is familiar. He raised the specter of a rigged election in 2016 before he beat Hillary Clinton, and in 2020 before the election. In his attempts to undermine the 2024 contest, he's making allegations that are unfounded before the election is even held. Mr. Trump's refusal to accept the results of the 2020 election had historic consequences. The Times writes, the so-called big lie, Mr. Trump's false claim that the election was stolen from him, led to the January 6, 2021 insurrection at the Capitol, and two of four criminal indictments against the former president, as well as his second impeachment. So We are in a country that is divided by region, by race. Trump is ahead in the NPR poll by 12 points among whites, down by 18 points by non-whites. There's a gender gap. And one of his acolytes is the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives, James Michael Johnson, graduate of LSU twice, undergraduate, law school, son of a firefighter, went to a public high school, Captain Shreve High School. Brilliant fellow, but he is a true conservative, and he's not faking it. He doesn't have the background of John Kennedy, who supported John Kerry 20 years ago for president against George Bush. He doesn't have the background of John Kennedy, who backed abortion rights when he was the chief lawyer for Buddy Romer. He's not faking it. He is saying what he believes, and that, of course, gives some people pause. But yesterday, he went to Mar-a-Lago again, his second trip there in a few weeks, to what some would say kiss the ring of the leader of his party, Donald John Trump, and they want to win an election. And it's going to be close, and strategizing is, I guess, appropriate between the number one and number two people in the Republican Party in America. And here is Mike Johnson after former President Trump met with congressional Republicans last week on Capitol Hill.
President Trump brought an extraordinary amount of energy and excitement and enthusiasm this morning. That is what we're seeing in the party throughout the country. There is something happening in the country. That's the phrase I used to introduce the president this morning, and he repeated the phrase a number of times in his own remarks. People recognize right now in this country that this will be the most consequential election, certainly of our lifetimes and probably in maybe in the last century or more in America. Everything is at stake.
All right, that's Mike Johnson. As we know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, his fellow Republican from Georgia, she represents a big swath of Georgia, which gets within about 20 miles of Atlanta, but James Carville's correct. She doesn't have Atlanta, and she doesn't reflect the politics of that great American city, but it's akin to Louisiana. Baton Rouge and New Orleans are blue cities, but the rest of the state, most of it, is red, and not just red, but fire engine red, and as a result, Louisiana's a red state. And Georgia would be a red state, too, but Atlanta is just so big that it gives Democrats a fighting chance in a statewide election. But Marjorie Taylor Greene is enormously popular within her congressional district, and she seems to relish the pushback she gets when she says inflammatory things. But one of those people she will not challenge is Donald Trump. And when Mr. Trump visited with congressional Republicans last week, he made note of the friction with Marjorie Taylor Greene trying to get Mike Johnson out of his job as Speaker. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, to her credit, went before the microphones. This was from a reporter from CNN, and this is how she described what happened in that meeting.
I really found his speech to be one of my favorite speeches. He came in, talked to the conference, was very honest. He was funny. He was joking around constantly with everyone. He was really sweet to me. He said to Speaker Johnson, he goes, okay, you got one more seat. You need to be tougher. He saw me. I was sitting back a little ways. He saw me in there, and he was like, hello, Marjorie. He's always so sweet and recognizes me. And he said, are you being nice? He was joking. Are you being nice to Speaker Johnson? And I said, eh. And he said, okay, be nice to him. And I nodded my head. And then
there we go. Marjorie Taylor Greene, who loves her some Donald John Trump. And Marjorie Taylor Greene, a listener notes, just made 50 years old, May 27th. She has a lot of years to go. She's a baby in politics. She might run for the U.S. Senate next year, which I'm sure would be a dream in 2 years against John Ossoff of Atlanta in Georgia. But we'll see. And, of course, what happens in this election will, of course, have an impact on what happens in 2 years. If Trump wins, Democrats will almost certainly gain seats in Congress in 2026. And if Biden wins, Republicans will almost certainly gain seats in 2026. That's the nature of American politics, that there is always a counter wind blowing, and it usually affects adversely the power, the party in power in the White House. And now Donald Trump is surveying the field and trying to decide who his running mate will be. Most prognosticators say his best running mate would be Marco Rubio, who might get him some Hispanic vote. But Marco Rubio and Donald Trump tangled mightily in 2016, actually, when Rubio ran for president. He was called Little Marco by Donald Trump over and over and over. And they patched things up. Rubio's been a loyal supporter of the former president, both in office and out. But he would have to move out of Florida, or the Republicans, if they had Trump and Rubio both from Florida, they would give up Florida and its 30 electoral votes. And they're not going to do that. So Rubio would actually have to resign from Congress and move to another state if he wants to be on the ticket. And believe it or not, some people say he's considering that if he is offered the prospect of being on the ticket with Donald Trump. And it's amazing what politics will do. Some of us are old enough to remember when George Bush the First was a pro-choice Republican. And then when he was invited to be on the ticket with Ronald Reagan in 1980 in Detroit, he had an overnight conversion and became a pro-life Republican. So Rubio might actually move to another state to be on the ticket with Donald Trump. But let's go back, Robin, to 2016 when Rubio and Trump were really taking it to each other. And Rubio, to his credit, was not just taking it without pushback. Here's how the diminutive senator from the Sunshine State sounded when he was talking about Donald John Trump.
He's always calling me Little Marco. And I'll admit, the guy, he's taller than me, he's like 6'2", which is why I don't understand why his hands are the size of someone who's 5'2". Have you seen his hands? They're like this. And you know what they say about men with small hands? You can't trust them.
He said I had small hands. Actually, I'm 6'3", not 6'2", but he said I had small hands. They're not small, are they? I never heard that one before. I've always had people say, Donald, you have the most beautiful hands. Right?
He hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee it.
Parents
that
watching
was
less.
Donald John Trump responding to Marco Rubio. And I have a feeling that the way Trump keeps score, that Rubio will never be on a ticket with him. So that's just me saying it. I don't know that Trump's ever forgiven anybody for ridiculing his appearance. By the way, Trump is not 6'3", and he's not 230. He's more like 6'1", 280. Jerry West, when he got the Presidential Medal of Freedom, towered above Trump. West, when he was playing in the NBA for 14 years, listed at 6'2", and he towered over Donald John Trump. We'll talk more about what's happening in the world and what happened 40 years ago with Don Nelson after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. And in a few moments, we're going to remember Alan Berg, the talk show host who probably would have been a major national figure had he not been gunned down 40 years ago outside his home in Denver. A man who worked with him at KOA, who's lived in Baton Rouge since the late 80s, Don Nelson. He is here to remember his friend. And Robin has implored me. I know we've had some people waiting, and one person's been waiting longer than all the others, and Carol in Jefferson Terrace. We're going to slide you in because I appreciate your patience, and I always enjoy your comments. Go, Carol. You're on the air.
Yes. We have a man running for president that, a convicted felon. He stole national secrets. We had nominated people that couldn't pass a security clearance onto the Intelligence Committee. I think that this is not a sporting event. This is people's lives on the block here.
All right. Well, it's not a sporting event, but it's covered like a sporting event because of the Electoral College. The numbers of the Electoral College are enticing, and that's the way we cover it because everybody's trying to get to 270, and we'll see who gets there. But I can guarantee you that the eight from Louisiana, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, all eight are of them. All of eight of our electoral votes are going to Donald John Trump. Alan Berg, 50 years old, featured on 60 Minutes in January of 1984, which was a big year for talk radio 40 years ago. And then he was killed outside his Denver home a few months later on this date in the year that Ronald Reagan beat Walter Mondale 49-1. Only state Mondale carried in 1984 was Minnesota. But there was a lot to talk about then, as there is now. And Alan Berg did it like few others. But he was so popular in Denver and mentioned, I mentioned a little while ago that that station had such a reach, kind of like WWL in New Orleans, that he had listeners in 30 states. Here's Morley Safer in his report on Alan Berg in 1984 on 60 Minutes.
A woman filed a lawsuit against me early in my career. I think it was the second year I was in the business. Her husband had a coronary while he was listening to my show. So she filed suit against me because he became so angry in listening to my show that he felt that I was the causal connection for the death of her husband.
Isn't there something a little dangerous about this kind of broadcasting?
There is a danger. I agree with you. But I think that's the danger that we exhibit in all free, all rights of free expression, be it columnists who write newspapers.
Yeah, indeed. But you say yourself, you often go on there, you don't know quite what you're going to say.
Hopefully my legal training will prevent me from saying the one thing that will kill me. And I've come awfully close.
5 months later, he did get killed. And Don Nelson is here, worked with him at KOA. And Don, a story not often told was before 1984. In 1979, he was almost killed in his own studio, wasn't he?
He was. Jim, thank you very much for having me again. And thank you very much for bringing to the attention of your audience a guy that was an absolute titan in starting rock jock talk radio. Yes, he was almost killed in his studio. If you go back 40 years, the lobbies of business buildings are not like they are today. At KOA, radio and television, you could walk in. There was no security there. Alan Berg was broadcasting up on the second floor. A man by the name of David Lane, who was a member of the Ku Klux Klan, just walked up the stairs, walked down the hallway to the studio, went inside, and put a weapon to Alan Berg's head. And Alan Berg, I think this was one of the greatest things that Alan ever experienced, because it was live on radio. I was in the sales department. I had just come back from calls at about 3:30, and Alan was on the air from 1 until 4 every day. And when I tried to get close to the station to park my car, Denver police were everywhere. Sharpshooters on buildings and policemen everywhere. I stopped, asked one of the policemen. I said, I work at KOA. He said, are you familiar with Alan Berg? I said, very. And he said, well, there's a gunman that has a gun at Berg's head, and we're not letting anybody back in the building. So,
but Berg, when he was on the air with this guy, and I was trying to find a tape of it, but I couldn't, I heard he just went with the flow and challenged the guy to kill him.
He did. This is the line I will never remember.
Never forget.
Well, never forget, right. After I'd spoken to the policeman, because I wasn't listening to the radio, so I didn't know anything about this, I obviously went over to KOA, which was 850 on the dial. Station very similar, Jim. You summed it up to WWL in New Orleans. And started listening, and Alan was like on stage with this 50,000-watt transmitter saying, basically, he said to Lane, you don't have a hair on your butt. He used another word. If you don't pull that trigger, and my brains will go out over 50,000 watts.
Well, Lane didn't do it then, but he was one of the people arrested when Berg was assassinated by members of the white supremacist group, The Order, which believed in killing all Jews and sending all black people back to Africa. David Lane and Bruce Pierce were convicted on charges of federal civil rights violations for killing him, sentenced to 190 years and 252 years in prison, respectively, and Lane and Pierce went away, but Alan Berg went away forevermore, and he was remembered not only on film by Oliver Stone, who took his life and changed the names and moved the stage to Dallas in the movie Talk Radio 4 years later. That was about Berg. But his associate, Ken Hamblin, who I tried to reach, he's still alive. They called him the Black Avenger. He became famous in his own right.
Right.
But when Berg was killed after his show and Hamblin came on after him, of course, the station quickly got the news. And here is Ken Hamblin describing what happened on that night of June 18th, 1984.
I'm very, very, very angry. It's a violent world. Violent people, sick people. I always said we needed a good national health program in this country, a good mental health program. I guess I'm babbling. Guess I'm sitting here and babbling. I don't know. We'll get you some first-hand information as it comes up. And those of you that have your TV sets, I'm sure you'll get additional information from that. A moment ago, I was touching on a concept, whether you can kill ideas, whether you can kill thoughts. Somebody tonight, somebody out there, I can feel your presence. I can feel your presence listening to KOA to feel the result of your handiwork. You're a loser, man. You're a loser. Talk show host or a dime a dozen. If Alan Berg was anything before you blew him away, he was nothing. And you made him immortal.
That was Ken Hamblin. Well said.
Well said. Yeah. And Jim, what has not really been brought out to a great degree is Alan Berg, like so many personalities in media, one-on-one when he wasn't on the air was one of the kindest, soft-spoken people you would ever want to meet. He went in the studio, put the headphones on, got behind the microphone, and an entirely different person came out.
Well, he spawned a legion of imitators, and one of those was Rush Limbaugh. And
right.
We're talking 1984, Berg's featured on 60 Minutes. And then, as fate would have it, about the time Berg was killed a few months after, Morton Downey Jr. got fired in Sacramento. The program director out there had known Rush from his days in Kansas City. And Rush was not a talk show host, but he knew he had the gift of gab, and he was in a tight spot. So he called Rush, and he went to Sacramento, became a presence there. And 4 years later, he went national with his show and lasted until 2020. And now we have a lot of people who are inciting the masses, but they're doing this mostly from the right side of the spectrum. Berg was a liberal. He would be a rare person on the air today.
Totally. Absolutely. Really a champion for the downtrodden, the people, many uneducated. He would be a real champion for homelessness today. There would be all sorts of shows that he would do about that. And he would, one of the things, and I brought it out last year when you asked me to be on, he would start the show right after the CBS News at the top of the hour, and he would constantly say to those ladies, elderly, that had the blue tinted hair, "Leave me alone.
We got to go."
Okay.